Today's dramatic reading of Daniel chapter 2 includes readers for King Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian wise men, Daniel, and a narrator. It is appropriate that our youngest reader for this passage is reading the lines of Daniel. Most likely Daniel was not yet 20 years old when this event took place. It so happens that our reader also has the right name for the job. We will be reading the entire second chapter of Daniel. Now, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king gave orders to call in the soothsayer priests, the conjurers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dream. So they came in and stood before the king. The king said to them,
"I had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to understand the dream."
Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic,
"O king, live forever. Tell the dream to your servants, and we will declare the interpretation."
The king replied to the Chaldeans,
"The command from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be turned to a rubbish heap. But if you declare the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts, a reward, and great honor. Therefore, declare to me the dream and its interpretation."
The Chaldeans answered the king and said,
"Let the king tell the dream to his servants, and we will declare the interpretation."
"I know for certain that you are trying to buy time, because you have perceived that the command from me is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you, for you have agreed together to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the situation is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, so that I may know that you can declare to me its interpretation."
The Chaldeans answered the king and said,
"There is no person on earth who could declare the matter to the king, because no great king or ruler has ever asked anything like this of any soothsayer, priest, sorcerer, or Chaldean. Moreover, the thing which the Lord demands is difficult, and there is no one else who could declare it to the king except gods, whose dwelling place is not with mortal flesh."
Because of this, the king became angry and extremely furious, and he gave orders to kill all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued that the wise men be killed, and they looked for Daniel and his friends to kill them. Then Daniel replied with discretion and discernment to Arioch, the captain of the king's bodyguard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He said to Arioch, the king's officer,
"For what reason is the decree from the king so harsh?"
Then Arioch informed Daniel of the matter. So Daniel went in and requested of the king that he would be given a grace period so that he might declare the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and informed his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, about the matter, so that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his friends would not be killed with the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed God of heaven. Daniel said,
"May the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. It is he who changes the times and the periods. He removes kings and appoints kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to people of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and power. Even now you have made known to me what we requested of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter."
Thereupon Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to kill the wise men of Babylon. He went and said this to him,
Do not kill the wise men of Babylon. Take me into the king's presence, and I will declare the interpretation to the king.
Then Arioch hurriedly brought Daniel into the king's presence and spoke to him as follows. I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can make the interpretation known to the king. The king said to Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar,
Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?
Daniel answered before the king and said,
As for the secret about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, sorcerers, soothsayer priests, nor diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. This was your dream and the visions in your mind while on your bed. As for you, O king, while on your bed, your thoughts turn to what would take place in the future, and he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will take place. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living person, but for the purpose of making the interpretations known to the king, that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. You, O king, were watching, and behold, there was a single great statue. That statue, which was large and of extraordinary radiance, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. The head of that statue was made of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, and its feet, partly of iron and partly of clay. You continued watching until a stone was broken off without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed to pieces, all at the same time, and they were like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a giant mountain that filled the entire earth. This was the dream, and now we will tell you the interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the honor. And wherever the sons of mankind live, or the animals of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has handed them over to you, and has made you ruler over all of them. You are the head of gold. And after you, another kingdom will arise, inferior to you. Then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. Then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron. Just as iron smashes and crushes everything, so, like iron that crushes, it will smash and crush all these things. And in that you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron. It will be a divided kingdom, but will have within it some of the toughness of iron. Since you saw the iron mixed with common clay, and just as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong, and part of it will be fragile. In that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in their descendants, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not combine with pottery. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will endure. It will itself endure forever. Just as you saw that a stone was broken off from the mountain without hands, and it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future. So the dream is certain, and its interpretation is trustworthy.
Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and paid humble respect to Daniel and gave orders to present him an offering and incense. The king responded to Daniel and said,
Your God truly is a God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, since you have been able to reveal this secret.
Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the administration of the province of Babylon, while Daniel was at the king's court.
What an experience. We've all had dreams. My favorite one, some of you have heard. You know, usually they're not, a lot of times they're not pleasant. At least the ones that we remember can be fairly unpleasant. Before I was saved, I remember I woke up trembling several times because I'd had a dream about hell. So those tend to stick with you. But my favorite dream, although it has an element of negativity, it ends very interestingly. Probably 2/3 of you have heard this. I was in the spring term at a Bible Institute in Colorado, and there were like 5 or 6 of us in a room together. And I dreamed one night that my roommates kidnapped me and took me, and they had me tied up in a ranch house way out yonder. They were going to get ransom money. And I asked them, well, what are you going to do with the ransom money when you get it? And they said, whatever the Lord wants. You can't make that up. I mean, that's just the way it happened. I told a guy named Ron and a guy named Kelly, and there were some others there. I told them about it later, and they said, yeah, we would have thought of that. But usually dreams don't end like that. And a lot of times there's some element of significance to dreams. They show up quite often in Scripture. It doesn't take long to make a list of people that had dreams or visions that were very significant. You know, names like Jacob, Joseph, Pharaoh. Joseph, the New Testament, the earthly parent of Jesus, Pilate's wife, Peter, the list just goes on. I quickly gathered about 30-some names from Scripture of people that had dreams or visions, and they were significant. And it's really important that they not be misused. Misuse is a problem, big problem. Sorry, I should have had that slide up there sooner. Jeremiah talks about it. He brought this word from the Lord, "Behold, I am against those who have prophesied false dreams, declares the Lord, and related them and led my people astray by their falsehoods and reckless boasting. Yet I did not send them or command them, nor do they furnish this people the slightest benefit, declares the Lord." So, what do you do with dreams? You know, there are people living today that put a large amount of stock in dreams that they have. And there are those, like these prophets that Jeremiah was talking about, who just misuse and spread falsehood based on this special revelation that they got. So the conclusion that I come to when I consider the vast array of things that go on, the safest thing to do with the dream that you have or with the dream that somebody else had and they're telling you about it is consult the book and see how it matches up with God's word. You know, if somebody has a dream that they should kidnap you, that doesn't match up, for instance. And there are lots of other things that people have claimed they were directed to do by God, and they just don't match up. So always compare what you've heard about or what you experienced in a dream with God's word. Make that your final authority, not something that could have maybe been the result of indigestion, you know? That's a possibility. Well, it's clear that the king had a very significant dream, and it really got his attention. And he knew it was important that he figure out what it's about, but he couldn't. And his wise men were just not any help. I read for the wise men a little bit ago, and they were saying, "King, this is impossible. We can't do that. You haven't even told us the dream." And he was saying, "Well, if you guys are legit, you'll be able to tell me the dream and the interpretation of the dream." Kind of get the impression that he didn't really have a high level of confidence in them. You recall that he said something about them agreeing together to speak lying and corrupt words. That's a clue. That came to us in verse 9. If you're accusing somebody of lying and corruption, probably not a lot of trust and confidence there. So he was stuck, and he just decided, well, we'll just get rid of him. So that was a perilous situation for anybody that was considered a wise man. He was just going to get rid of them all. And we know from looking at the whole of this book that there were times when that was his method of dealing with people. You aren't cooperating, you aren't doing what I want, we're done with you, off with your head. Years later, someone looking back and talking about Nebuchadnezzar said this: because of the grandeur which he, that's referring to God, bestowed on him, that's referring to Nebuchadnezzar, all the people, nations, and men of every language feared and trembled before him, Nebuchadnezzar. Whomever he wished, he killed, and whomever he wished, he spared alive, and whomever he wished, he elevated, and whomever he wished, he humbled. He just did what he wanted to do. So Daniel is confronted with the head of the bodyguard. That would be kind of comparable to today's Secret Service. Only back then, there was also the element of execution. And I'm sure that this was not anything new to Arioch, to be on assignment to just get rid of some unhelpful people. The king just wanted them eliminated. But it's so interesting how calm Daniel remained when he learned from Arioch about the king's decree that the wise men should die. It says that Daniel replied with discretion and discernment to Arioch, the captain of the king's bodyguard, who had gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He said to Arioch, the king's commander, "For what reason is the decree from the king so urgent?" I just love that. Every time I read that, I smile. Then Arioch informed Daniel about the matter. Daniel recognized Arioch's not the one that issued this order. He's just been assigned to come and do this. So it really wasn't going to do him any good to appeal to Arioch. "Oh, no, please don't do this." But he asked him a question that brought forth a very helpful response. And I'm just amazed. Because this guy, this paid executioner, was pausing and going to give him an answer. you would think that, okay, I'm here to execute people. I'm just going to get on with the job and get it done. But he stopped. He waited. He answered. He gave Daniel the history on what's going on. I guess we could think back to that verse in Proverbs that says that when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. This would be an example of that. So he paused to give an answer, and then the next thing it says is, so Daniel went in and requested of the king that he would give him time. Well, how did that look? He was just about to be done away with, and next thing you know, he's got an audience with the king. How long did that take to get that set up? We don't know. And did Arioch escort him in? My guess is that he did, because later on, when Daniel has the information, he gets escorted in. So maybe there's multiple guards and they're all taking him in there. And then how long did it take for the king to figure out, well, am I going to grant his request? You know, he had previously accused his other Babylonian wise men of stalling, lying, being corrupt, stalling. But I think he knew there's a difference. I think he remembered last week we noticed from chapter 1 that Daniel was and his friends were 10 times better. They graduated at the top of the class. So he gave him some time. And of course, immediately it was time to call a prayer meeting. Daniel went to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and said, we need to pray, like right now, immediately. What a good idea. Isn't that the best thing to do when you're in a crisis? Pray. And if possible, pray with others. I had a flashback to a movie that I'm sure many of you have seen, War Room. The title's a little bit interesting because War Room is referring to a prayer room. And we know from looking at the overall flow of Daniel's life that he made it a practice to go to a place of prayer on a regular basis. He was doing that. So when you cultivate that habit, that process of going to a place of prayer and praying daily, consistently, faithfully, then it's just natural that when a crisis comes along, that's what you do then. You pray. Now, Jesus mentioned a specific prayer place. In Matthew 6, he said, but when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who's in secret. In the King James, that inner room is translated closet. That's where we get that idea. Some of our closets would work for that. Some of them, not so much. You'd be a sardine if you could get yourself in there, but there are some that are suitable for such a thing. But the point is, this was a regular habit for him. He prayed in all situations. And now, when a crisis came, he and his friends prayed. It's really easy to worry, scheme, manipulate, and fail to pray. Right? That's a direction we go too many times. But God is waiting for us to turn to Him when we're in a hard situation. And that's exactly what Daniel did. He turned to the Lord, and his friends prayed diligently, and were told that the answer came. Then the mystery was revealed. God gave the information that they needed. It was like, I don't mean to sound unreverent here, irreverent, but it's like God kept the dream on file, and then just replayed it for Daniel. You know, he had just sent it to Nebuchadnezzar earlier, and now sends it to Daniel. Daniel's prayer, which I read in the call to worship today, just completely gives all the thanks and credit and praise and honor to God. You know, he is so far above us that it's amazing that he condescends, as he so often does, to reach down to where we are. But here's kind of the wrap-up of that prayer. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and power, for now you have made known to me what we requested of you, what we requested. And you've made known to us the king's matter. There's confirmation that this was a joint effort. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they were all praying fervently, and the Lord blessed and answered their prayers. And now he praised God for that. Well, then there's the promise of explanation for the dream. They've got the information, they've thanked the Lord for sending it to them, and now Daniel goes to explain it to the king. God was going to make the dream understandable, and he was going to make it possible for the king to understand the thoughts of his own mind. You know, we think we can understand our own thoughts. A lot of times we really don't. We need outside help, and that was the case here. And in verse 30, Daniel makes it clear that it's not because of any great ability of his own, but it's all about God. But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king, and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. So God is at work. God is sovereign. He turns the heart of the king wherever he pleases, we read in Proverbs. So for some reason, God in his infinite wisdom decided that he is going to present to Nebuchadnezzar truth. He's going to eventually open his eyes. We'll see today, next Sunday, Sunday after that, how God just keeps working on Nebuchadnezzar. I think we're going to see him in heaven someday. But he was a slow learner, as we're going to see here in a little bit. But God just kept on working on him. Well, the presentation of the dream in verses 31 to 35, Daniel just reruns it for him. Okay, this is it, king. This is what you saw. And right there on the screen, you've got a likeness that's, you know, pretty good artistic rendition of what there was. The statue had a head of gold, then the arms and chest were silver, and then the next portion was bronze, and the legs were iron, and then the toes were a mixture of iron and clay. And so he just goes through that, and the king says, oh yeah, that's exactly what I saw. So then he kind of gives the wrap-up here in verse 35. The iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were crushed all at the same time by this rock that was falling, and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, And the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found, but the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So this stone hits the statue and it just completely obliterates it. Now, you probably have driven by or seen combines in the field this time of year. They were working right around here not long ago and other places. And especially when they're working on grain, wheat, or other kinds of grain, you see the chaff that comes out the back, and it's just this dusty, fluffy, unstable stuff. The wind just blows it and it's gone. And this says right here that this statue just becomes like that. Just becomes like dust, chaff, and just blows away. It's just gone. That's amazing in itself that you have such a piece and it could just disintegrate and be gone. But that's what happens. And we'll touch a little bit more on why that is here in just a moment. Predictions from that dream. Daniel goes on to describe how that this statue represented Babylon and then other nations that would come after Babylon. And ultimately, all of those would be done away with when God's kingdom is established. And that stone that destroys the statue then becomes a great mountain and fills the whole earth. So Nebuchadnezzar is getting a look ahead at the future. Now, here's the last couple of verses in this explanation that Daniel was giving them. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. So that's referring to the millennial kingdom, which Dr. Whitcomb liked to say is the front porch to the eternal state. So the way things happen in the millennium is a foretaste. It's getting really close to how things will be in the eternal state. It's not completely 100% perfect yet, but it's getting there. So this kingdom, which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but will itself endure forever, inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so the dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. King Nebuchadnezzar had a lot of interest in the future. He had a lot of interest in kingdoms. He had a lot of interest in power. And God, in his great grace and mercy, condescended, gave Nebuchadnezzar something that he could really relate to, something that he could really be interested in. So he was completely astounded, of course. And at the moment, he was so overwhelmed, he fell down. It appears that he bordered on worshiping Daniel, but it says that he was responding to Daniel's God. Surely, your God is the God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. So in the moment, Nebuchadnezzar worshipped. Now, the unhappy news is he hadn't quite got it yet. What he did is he said, okay, this is really good. Daniel, your God is great. But it would appear that he didn't really understand that Daniel's God is the God, the only God. Just the way he says this, your God is a God of gods and Lord of kings. It sounds like he's thinking in terms of, if you don't mind the somewhat hokey analogy, of varsity and junior varsity. So this God of Daniel's, you know, he's on the varsity level, but then there's other junior varsity gods. They're still around, and they're still involved, but they're just not nearly as powerful or as important as your God. That's my conclusion when I look at the big picture here, is that's how Nebuchadnezzar was thinking. Because next week, when we get to chapter 3, he makes a God. And we'll talk more about that, obviously, next week. So, as we look at this, we see that our God really is an awesome God. And the contrast between man's limitations and God's complete lack of any limits is really amazing. Our God really is an awesome God. He is the only one worthy of praise and honor and glory. He's it. He's the one that should receive all credit for everything that we see around us. You know, Brother Dennis was listing some of the awesome things of creation that we can see in the sky and around us. Those are awesome because they were made by an awesome God. The word awesome has really taken a hit. Have you noticed? In the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, awesome has started to be used for milkshakes and cotton candy and race cars and football players, stuff like that, you know? It's really gotten cheapened a lot. But our God, that's without equal, he's the creator and sustainer of everything, he is awesome. And in his infinite wisdom, he chose to reveal some of his long-term plans and purpose to this pagan king, Nebuchadnezzar. We don't know exactly why he chose Nebuchadnezzar. He knows why. He wasn't up there rolling a dice or spinning a spinner or something. God had a purpose, an exact plan as to why he chose Nebuchadnezzar. And someday, maybe we'll get to know more of the big picture. But God knows everything. Here, let's just review a few things. That's one place in Scripture where it tells us that he knows all things. Nothing is hidden from him. There's no creature hidden from his sight. He sees everyone's heart. He knows the hearts of all men. His understanding is infinite. His knowledge is perfect. He is awesome.